The theme for this weekend is events subsequent to the return of Jesus Christ. Our speaker is Brother Dennis Bevins from the Austin Leander Ecclesia. And class four is entitled A New World Order. Brother Dennis.
Hello. Okay, I know we've probably been drinking from a fire hose. I'm going to slow down a little bit and give you some of that time I expended on this last class back. I also know I'm competing with dinner, and I heard it's going to be good. So if I'm not careful, there could be a hook around my neck, and I don't want that to happen. Now, in this class, we're going to look at some highlights that really are going on concurrent with the temple being built. And this is where I put the big asterisk. This is my best guess on the order. If you want to flip-flop somebody, if you want to take one out, we'll have a problem. But if you want to reverse the order of a few of these, I'm perfectly fine with it, because I don't know. I'm just putting them into what I think is a logical sense. So all of these things, we're going to have a verse to support that it will happen. The timing, there's not enough biblical evidence for me to say without a shadow of a doubt. So I'm saying that as my open disclaimer. You disagree with me, that's okay. We can swap them around if you need to. And if you really have a good argument for why one of these is out of order, share it with me. Convince me and I'll change the slide for next time. Deal? Okay. So we're going to go back to 2 Samuel 7. We made reference to this when we were talking in Jeremiah. And so let's remind ourselves of the promises that are here. We'll do this for Abraham tomorrow. But this is the promises to David. When the day shall be fulfilled, thou shalt sleep with thy fathers. I will set up thy seed after thee, which will proceed out of thy bowels, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, he shall be my son. If he commit iniquity, I will chasten him with the rod of men, the stripes of the children of men. Now all of these have shadow fulfillments in Solomon, but none of them were fulfilled by Solomon. Let's keep going. But my mercy shall not depart away from him as I took it from Saul, which I put away before thee. Thine house and thine kingdom shall be established forever before thee. Thy throne shall be a Sabbath forever. So the seed is pointing directly to Jesus. And this house, this is a household. Your household and your kingdom shall be established forever before thee. Telling us David's going to witness these things happen. It points directly to Jesus and was promised to Mary, as we'll see in Luke chapter 1. The angel said unto her, Fear not, Mary, for thou hast favor with God. Behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb, bring forth a son, call his name Jesus. He shall be great, shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give him the throne of his father David. He shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and as of his kingdom there shall be no end. So we can go through Matthew 1, verse 1, and link up the promises to David and the promises to Abraham as the foundation for the New Testament, which we've all probably done before, so I don't need to do it again. But it's a reminder to us that we've talked about the things of the kingdom, but the things of the name are of equal importance. And Jesus being the seed that will sit on this throne to rule over the house of Jacob forever is of equal importance to anything else that is happening on around this time. Now, we'll look at Abraham for a minute. I said I was going to do this tomorrow. Boy, I already forgot that. I'm doing it now. Promises to Abraham, Genesis chapter 12, where Abraham is told to get out of the country, from thy kindred, from thy father's house, to a land that I will show thee. I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. I will bless them that bless thee, curse him that curseth thee, and of thee shall all families of the earth to be blessed. So now we're looking at national promises in contrast to the throne. The name great, being immortal, this is personal promises to Abraham. And thou shalt be a blessing is a national promise to Israel. In verse 3, we've got a shadow of today. But in the kingdom age, that will be a reality that all families of the earth shall be blessed. Look at chapter 13, verses 14 and 15. After Lot was separated from him, he lifted up his eyes and looked forward, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. So he's told after this, all this land you can see, you can walk, I'm going to give it to you and your seed. Now, Lot sees a city. Abraham sees the promises, verse 10 and verse 12. So the question for all of us to ask is, what do we see when we look up from our labors? Do we look at the buildings and thinking of men, the accomplishments of our own existence, or we'd look at the unfolding of the promises of God and how we can be a part of it. Note this north, south, east, and west. He's not told to look up. The kingdom is going to be something that he could walk through physically on this planet. The promise is clearly designed with a specific location in mind. Verse 16, I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so a man can number the dust of the earth. Then shall thy seed also be numbered. So we might picture this little dust storm. Anyone want to start counting how many little speckles of dust there is in that? That's a lot. That's one little dust cloud. The dust of the earth, this is a multitude. So oftentimes we focus on the many that are called and the few that are chosen. It's well and right we should. It's fair for all of us to ask this question. What am I doing right now to be part of the few? That's a fair question. We should constantly be challenging ourselves. But that being said, let's not limit the capacity of the Father. And we're going to talk about that in our exhortation tomorrow. Our God's not planning on, here's the 20 people that made it. Look at this awesome kingdom we share. There's a multitude, sand of the sea, stars of the heaven. Our goal is to be part of that multitude, to be part of this family of God. But not to minimize it in size because it doesn't match what we can conceive in our mind. Verse 13, he walked the length of it, the breadth of it. It was promised to give to he could see it, he could touch it. So let's go to Galatians 3 again. To Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not to seeds as of many, but to thy seed, which is Christ. And now we're splitting hairs a bit on the promises to Abraham. Some of them were to him personally. Some of them were to his seed nationally. And we kind of did that as we went through it. But Paul, to the Galatians, is trying to make a very profound point. I want you to focus on the seed. And so, at verse 27, as many as have been baptized in Christ, put on Christ, are neither Jew nor Greek, bond or free, male nor female, for you're all one in Christ Jesus. If you be Christ, you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. That's our hope. And what is the purpose of him bringing that up? Putting Jesus above the law. Putting circumcision behind. Putting the premise of the law of Moses as secondary to the law of grace seen in the faith of Christ, in the face of Jesus Christ. Paul, that's the whole book of Galatians in a nutshell. Who's that repeated to? Hebrews 11. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out to a place he should afterward receive an inheritance, obeyed and went out, not knowing whither he went. He sojourned in a land of promise in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs of him of the same promise. And what did these three faithful brethren do? They looked for a city whose has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Full circle to Ezekiel. What else? Well, let's look at Amos chapter 9. We'll pick up at verse 11. In that day, I'll raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise up the ruins, and I will build as in the days of old, that they may possess the remnant of Eden and all the heathen that are called by my name, saith the Lord, that doeth this. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, the treader of grapes him that soweth seed, the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and the hills shall melt. And I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel, and they shall build the waste cities and inhabit them. Again, the work of the mortal nation, that they're going to rebuild and they're going to inhabit. But not just for a time. They will plant vineyards and drink the wine. It takes a while to go from planting the vineyard to harvesting the grapes, to pressing the wine, to letting it ferment, to be able to enjoy it. If you're able to plant and drink that wine, that is called a permanent residence. They will make gardens and eat the fruit of them. I will plant them upon their land. They shall no more be pulled up out of their land, which I have given them, saith the Lord thy God. That's the last of the Jews returning. This is the long-term plan. Long enough for them to plant, harvest, and drink this wine. The last verse tells us their land forever, permanent residence. It ties to Genesis chapter 12. How about Isaiah 2? It will come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. Same thing we saw in Ezekiel. Many shall go and say, come ye, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And for what purpose? He will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion will go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. none of this has ever happened. This is what will happen in the kingdom. The nations flowing to the mountain, housing the house of God to learn the law. Hasn't happened, but it will. Note, walk his way ties us right back to Genesis, and we get to Abel and Enoch and Noah, nice flurry into Hebrews chapter 11. Walk God's way, because if we walk God's way, we walk in righteousness. Keep going. He shall judge among the nations, rebuke many people. There shall be their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against any nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Again, part of the cleanup effort we saw in Ezekiel chapter 39. Let's look at Micah's version. In the last days it shall come to pass, the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established on the top of the mountains and be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. Many nations shall come and say, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways, we will walk in his paths, for the law shall go forth out of Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. All peoples being blessed with the hope of Israel, fulfilling the promises to Abraham. Jerusalem now has become the new capital of the world, where all people are flowing towards this. Notice the mountain and the purpose. It's to drive the knowledge of the mortal nations, to learn the law, the word of God, and to walk his way. Because is this the refinement of the planet as it's being converted to righteousness in the kingdom age? Again, none of this has ever happened before. It cannot refer to a time in the past. It has to refer to a time in the future. What about the next verse? He shall judge amongst many people and rebuke strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks, nations left up sword against nation, neither learn war anymore. There's the Micah's version. Of course, we can see that. I had the picture of the UN statue where it's listed. Look at the next verse. Every man shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree. Perfect Israel, natural Israel. None shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord of hosts has spoken. Now, the establishment of national Israel through the acknowledgement of perfect Israel prepares them for the rest of the world to come, to the spiritual Israel to be cultivated. A migration towards world peace and away from wars and territories of men. Just look at the next couple verses. For all people will walk, everyone in the name of his God, and he will walk in the name of our God. The name of the Lord our God forever and ever. Not for a while, for the rest of existence. In that day, saith the Lord, I will assemble her that halteth, gather her that is driven out, and her that I have afflicted. I will make her that halteth a remnant, and her that was cast off a strong nation. And the Lord shall reign over them in Mount Zion from henceforth, even forever. Look at verse 8. And thou, O tower of the flock, stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come, even the first dominion. The kingdom shall come to the daughter of Jerusalem. And so here we see this in our baptismal questions, and we quote this verse about Israel being the first dominion. But what does that mean? What that means is this is where Christ establishes his kingdom first. The mortal nation of Israel then becomes the model nation for the entire planet. You can't export what you don't have. So there's a reason when we talk about the putting a novice ahead of an ecclesia, we get the commendation that if they can't run their own house well, how could they run the house of God? And that's good and fair. You can't export what you don't have. If you're not fair and just, you can't export justice and fairness. So Israel can't teach the world to honor God and to be sanctified by his name because they're following his ways, because they're not. But once they are, then they can. And that makes them the first nation dominated by Jesus as their king. And from there, that is exported throughout the entire planet. The world then can be converted to righteousness. Let's look at Jeremiah. This is Jeremiah 16. O Lord, my strength, my fortress, my refuge in the day of affliction. The Gentiles shall come unto thee from the ends of the earth and shall say, surely our fathers have inherited lies, vanities, and things wherein there is no profit. We saw in Ezekiel and other places the Gentiles flowing to Jerusalem. It takes on a religious significance. It all really does with worship. Note, the believing the lies and the empty, worthless things that had no profit. That's false religion. And as we look at this, we start with the Gentiles having believed the lie. One of those lies allowed them to declare Jesus the Antichrist when he returned and started doing the things that we're talking about today. And they're now able to look and see the truth of the matter, the emptiness of the things they were told before. When this happens, Jerusalem is not only the capital of the world, but it's now also the religious and cultural center as well. Look at Zechariah 14 again. The Lord shall be king over all the earth, and that day there will be one Lord and his name one. One king, no false gods, no defilement of who this God is. One king, one name. Drop down a couple verses. Now, we've looked at verse 16 before. Worshipping the king and keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. Let's keep reading. It shall be that whosoever will not come of all the families of the earth to Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts shall, even upon them there shall be no rain. This helps establish the center of world religion and rule. The new law requires an annual trek to the city for the purposes of keeping the feast. And though required, this verse tells us there is a possibility of rebellion. There is no point in this verse even being here if it was impossible to rebel. Why state the punishment of what's going to happen if you don't, if you can't? It doesn't make any sense. It becomes unnecessary. Instead, look at verse 17 where it's doubled down. The family of Egypt that does not go up, they will have no rain. There will be the plague wherein the Lord will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that shall not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So he adds the punishment using Egypt and the plagues as an example. That ought to ring a bell. Imagine that being taught out of Jerusalem. Hey, remember there was a nation that put Israel under bondage and look what God did to them. Hey, I don't think we want that to happen to us. No rain, bad. Frogs, lice, and flies, even worse. This is a problem, people. Let's follow the things of the Lord. And isn't that the purpose? To teach the justice and fairness of God to all people. Israel first, and then the entire planet. There's more going on at this time. Look at what's going on in Isaiah 56. Isaiah 56 is not that slide. That's that slide. All right. The sons of the stranger that join themselves unto the Lord to serve him and to love the name of the Lord, to be his servants, everyone that keepeth the Sabbath from polluting it and taketh hold of my covenant. Even them will I bring where? My holy mountain. Make them joyful where? My house of prayer. What are we going to do? Burnt offerings, sacrifices, and be accepted upon my altar. For my house shall be called a house of prayer for all people. That has never happened, but it will. Establishment of the law of Moses as the standard, more evidence of sacrifice in the feast that we've already saw, and we'll see some more again later. Here we notice specifically the working of the Sabbath, the working to serve the Father, and to the exclusion of serving self, and of course, the covenant relationship that comes as a result of that. Malachi 4. I will send Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. So once Jerusalem is established, the center of the world, Christ and the saints will begin a massing preaching effort that's going to be set throughout the remainder of the kingdom. Now we saw this in shadow with the work of John the Baptist for sure. Jesus said, Elijah has already come. Here we gives us an opportunity to see, imagine the work of Elijah. Wouldn't you like to be paired up on that preaching effort? You ever done a preaching effort, went, yeah, we had a lot of good effort, and we were doing a good thing, but how many people were baptized? And we go, oh. Can you imagine being part of a preaching effort where, hey, I'm going to go with John the Baptist and you're going to go with Elijah, and there's about a few hundred thousand of us that are going to go convert this nation to righteousness? Can you imagine the results of that? This is an exciting time. This is not something that refers to something that's already done. It's something that's going to happen throughout the remainder of the millennium. Here we see the work of Elijah toward the house of Israel first. And then, again, you can't export what you don't have. Convert the house of Israel back to righteousness and then preach that conversion to the rest of the world. Zechariah 8. Thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion. I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. Zion shall be called the City of Truth. What a great title. The mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, every man with his staff in his hand for very age. The streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the street. What a beautiful sound of the kingdom. Isn't it fun to listen to kids play? You know, the sign of life in a click. I know every parent in here, and so those of you who haven't been parents for a while, I'm probably in that camp. I got a little grandkid, so I'm getting a chance to work that through again. And those of you that are young parents, I know you know exactly how this feels, so when you squirm, I'm on your side. Your child makes a noise during memorial service, and you instantly feel like everyone in the hall is looking at your noisy, disobedient child. We just had a child laugh. I wish I could have timed that. It was perfect. Now, those of us that have had kids and it's been a long time, we're not as interested in the quiet as we are. That's the future of the truth. That child laughing in our hall, yeah, you want him to learn to be quiet. And we do try to teach them in the way they should go. But it's not with a fist of iron. It's with the hope of a joy set before us. Because that little child that's learning the things of the truth is the future of the ecclesia if Christ's return doesn't happen while you and I are alive. Imagine the joy in the streets of children, boys and girls playing. There's no fear of their safety. We don't have to worry about, oh boy, I hope this one's not abducted tonight. I hope this one's not sold into something. I mean, those things happen today. Not in the kingdom. There's no more room for the sin of the flesh to do whatever it wants, whenever it wants, however it wants, to whomever it wants. Those days are over now in the kingdom. Why? Because the city of truth in the holy mountain of God has brought a generation of peace to last for this 1,000 years. Let's look at the next one. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, saith the Lord? So you think that'll be awesome? So do I. That's God. You think that's going to be great? Can you imagine the sadness of the father when he sees one more of his children that he'll never have an opportunity to learn the things of the kingdom of the name suffer in an abusive household? Can you imagine the sadness of a father, of our heavenly father, when that is happening all around the world right now as we speak? We think it'll be fun to watch kids playing in the street for joy. God says, I will too. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country, from the west country. I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. They shall be my people. I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. Nothing like the state of the streets of Jerusalem right now, but it will be. Look at chapter 2 of Zechariah. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come and dwell in the midst of thee, saith the Lord. Many nations shall be joined to the Lord in that day. They shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee. Thou shalt know that the Lord of hosts hath sent me unto thee. The Lord shall inherit Judah his portion in the Holy Land and shall choose Jerusalem again. So here we've been focusing on the peace again in Jerusalem, and then we export to the rest of the planet. We're going to talk more about the conditions of the kingdom tomorrow in our exhortation. I want to jump to Revelation chapter 14, where we're going to look at the nations at large. Revelation 14, verses 6 and 7. I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven from the everlasting gospel, having the everlasting gospel. For what purpose? To preach unto them that dwell on the earth, to every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. There's your massive preaching effort. With a loud voice saying, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come. Worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the foundations of the waters. This is concurrent with the last stand of latter-day Babylon. Let's look at chapter 17. There shall come one of the seven angels which had seven vials and talked with me, saying, come hither, I will show you the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. The inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. I want you to remember this imagery. It's going to be on our minds a lot as we finish today and start tomorrow morning. Prostitution is the false religious system of our day, the days past, and the days to come. The apostate woman, which is the great whore, riding on the many waters, becomes a representation of Christianity spread across the Gentile seas that will be united in their condemnation of Jesus, declaring him the Antichrist when he returns. We compare this in opposition to the bride that's being called out. That's a pretty drastic comparison. The bride that's being called out to be redeemed, to be cleansed by the blood of the Lamb, and to be part of the marriage supper. That's what we want, but the woman is talking about the state of spirituality. We want to be the purified bride united with Jesus. The opportunity of the purified bride is this apostate woman. Keep reading at verse 3. So he carried me away in the spirit to the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon the scarlet-covered beast, the names of blasphemy, full of names of blasphemy, and having seven heads and ten horns. Apostate Christianity, now at this point in Revelation, is riding a Roman beast. A beast that's got direct ties to ancient pagan Rome, converting, thanks to the Council of Nicaea, to what we would call Christian Rome, to what today we would call Catholicism. When we look at the current state of the Christian world, can you believe now that most of the Christian world respects the Pope in some way, shape, or form as some godly man? Can you imagine that 50 years ago? I mean, before Hal Lindsey and the late great Planet Earth, all the Christian world thought the Pope was the Antichrist. They gave him a new name. Hal made it even worse. Here is the point. Today, the Protestant movement has moved away from the church and brought all of the doctrines with them. If you throw out the Pope and transubstantiation, maybe put a sideline to purgatory, you've got basically the same thing. Christianity today is Catholicism light. And so when they ride together in this system of religion that is in opposition to Jesus, what happens? Well, let's look at these next two verses. The woman was arrayed in purple, scarlet, decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abomination, filthiness, and fornication. You look at the mega churches all around. Does any of them look like their God is a little short on cash? Riding in with precious jewels, does it even matter? God confounds the things of this world with his wisdom. He can build from nothing everything. He doesn't need us to make the truth better. He only needs us to follow it and love him. And so what was on her name? Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abomination of the earth. That's a wonderful title. Who wants to pin that on their daughter? Nobody. Nobody chooses this. There is nobody in the Christian world that says, you know, I think I want to be the whore of Babylon. That's my goal. They're believing a lie like we saw in the Old Testament when they're able to look back and go, we believed the lies and the emptiness and the things where there's no profit, in contrast, because it's not true. But when Jerusalem becomes the city of truth, judged by a righteous, forgiving king, spreading joy throughout the entire planet, starting with Jerusalem first and modeling it for everyone, who's going to stand in the way of that? Just as we saw the Pharisees and Sadducees upset at the crucifixion that they would lose their station and their place. What happens to those selling Christianity, or pick your favorite, you can say Islam, Buddhism, Hindu, pick them all. What's going to happen when someone else says all of this nonsense is over, this is the way, walk you in it? Now here's where Christianity has a decided disadvantage. Because when the world religions that don't understand anything about God, that's an open book. Hey, there's an opportunity. And, well, go to Islam. They at least recognize a separation between Jesus and God. Okay, there's a problem with this diversion through Ishmael. Fine, but we can at least go back to biblical roots in Genesis. But when you get to Christianity and you hang it on the doctrine of the Trinity, you then line up a reason to fight, literally in combat, against Jesus and his kingdom. What a sad reality. Jesus endured it once at his crucifixion, and here he will endure it again. We can tie Babylon to Rome in multiple ways. The easiest is through the Tower of Babel. Nimrod specifically, and using the prophet Zephaniah to be kind of the linchpin holding together Genesis and Revelation. So in our class tomorrow morning, we will take a quick detour to establish that connection going back to the Tower of Babel, filling through Zephaniah, and we'll get back into Revelation in the morning. Thank you, everyone, for your attention today. I'm giving you the time back as promised.